This audio download is an interview with Ronan in Copenhagen about the climate change conference COP15. Ronan was one of 960 odd people arrested on Saturday as part of the suppression of one of the largest demonstrations in Copenhagen, some 100,000 people. You'll find more audio recordings at www.wsm.ie. So maybe if we could start with you telling us a bit about yourself.
Sure. My name's Ronan. I was a member of the WSM when I was living in Ireland, and I moved to Denmark about a year and a half ago. I've been involved in some different projects here. I've been involved in a newly formed libertarian socialist group. I'm also involved in a info shop and library project in the youth house, which is kind of an autonomous social centre. I think that's pretty much it.
Obviously, we've been following the story about the Copenhagen summit and also the protests in the media. What's it like on the ground there? I mean, who's there in terms of both the delegates and the protesters?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's kind of quite a big division, really, between the protesters and the kind of representatives of civil society and all different organizations and NGOs and things like that who are taking this really, really seriously. And there's people from all over the world, from all sorts of groups, whether they're lobbying at the summit directly or whether they're on the streets opposing the summit or both in some cases. There's really a lot of people from that kind of end. But while on the politicians don't really seem to be taking it that seriously, I think they've actually in the past few months been making an effort to downplay the importance of the whole summit as they kind of began to realise that they couldn't get a proper deal. They started to kind of say, well, actually, maybe Copenhagen isn't the most important thing. What we really need to do is just get one step in the direction, and then maybe in 6 months or a year we'll be able to get a deal. So this was kind of like a big step down after it's been talked up for, you know, years. Now they're kind of starting to say, oh, well, actually, it's not really that important, just because they can't really agree on anything significant. So instead of like having people like Obama or whoever who's going to be here for like one day, or, you know, instead of having heads of state, there's going to be a lot of environment ministers and different civil servants and stuff like that, but not really the top people.
So there's been a range of protests. Some of them have been reported in the media over here, but can you give me just a very brief idea of the sort of stuff that's been going on?
Yeah, well, I mean, since last Friday, there's just been like dozens of different actions. It's very hard to keep track on what is happening and when. And they're really ranged in what their goals are and what their tactics are. So on Friday Friday started with a kind of typical civil disobedience demo, anti-capitalist demo focusing on the role of corporations and capitalism in creating the climate crisis. And then on Saturday, you had the really, really big kind of peaceful demo that just wanted to go to the Bella Center and where the summit is taking place and hand in a petition to, I think it's the woman, the Connie Hedegaard, who's chairing the meeting. And then there's been all sorts of other demos, like there's been two or three demos today just trying to draw attention to this issue or another issue. There's been actions from Via Campesina, the worldwide organization of peasants and landless farmers. There's been a No Borders demo. Yeah, really all sorts of different things.
So on Saturday, you were at the section of, I think it was the big demonstration that was cordoned off by the police, and just under 1,000 arrests were made. Do you want to explain what happened there?
Yeah, I mean, I'll explain it to you as far as I understand it. I mean, the whole situation is, in my opinion, is completely bizarre and makes no sense to me. So I can just tell it to you as far as I know it. And, it sounds weird because it is weird. There was the demo on Saturday was billed as I said, a peaceful thing. It was going to be handing in a petition. It wasn't going to be any kind of civil disobedience. There wasn't going to be any kind of direct action. It was just going to be a protest. So you know, the only thing I was afraid was of getting sore legs, you know. There was on the same day there was supposed to be a black block action elsewhere in the city. So about like somewhere anywhere between 50,000 and 100,000 people assembled for the big peaceful dance in a very big square near the parliament. And after some speeches, they started moving towards the Bella Centre. As we were walking along there, I kind of suddenly noticed that the Black Bloc demonstration had joined the peaceful demonstration, which was you know, really unexpected. That they were supposed to be going elsewhere and doing something completely different. So that was very strange. And then very shortly after that, we saw that the police were preparing an ambush or an attack on the demonstration. You could just see that they had their armored wagons lined up in side streets. And we tried to come away from that. And suddenly, yeah, they just started running at the demonstration and split it into three sections, basically. Two sections at the rear, which were where everyone was arrested, about 900 people. A certain section, the rest of the demonstration, which they let stay there. What I later found out, which I think is the most crazy thing about the whole thing, was that the Black Bloc demonstration was told by the police to join the main demonstration, and they were, I think it had been badly organized or something, but there was no one there who really knew what was going on, so there suddenly was all these black people on the demo, because the police had led them there, and then the police attacked the demo because the black people were there, which is, it's just really crazy. So anyway, the 900 people who were arrested there were put in strips in, plastic ties, and we were sitting down on the street, some of them for several hours, and then we were driven off to different holding cells and detention cells across the city. And then we were waiting on buses for some time, and then we were being processed and sitting in these cages in a warehouse, which was the police's climate prison. It's these like dog kennels or something, very strange wire cages in this old warehouse. And we were there for, in total, I was detained for 12 hours. And then we were released and driven to a train station.
And I think you said when they released drove you to a train station, it was somewhere there in the middle of nowhere when there were no trains running. I was like, did I misunderstand that?
Yeah, that seemed. I think it was like this was 3 a.m, so there was no buses running anyway. It was actually pretty strange, because at first they said they were going to drive us to this one called Flintong, which was closer to the police station and was much better connected. And then they just drove by that one and drove us to this one, which was much further out of the way and didn't have nearly as good connections, and the buses weren't running. I think the trains were running like once an hour or something like that. I'm not really sure. But luckily there were some people from Anarchist Black Cross, the prisoner support group, who had a car, and they took turns ferrying people into the inner city where they could get proper night buses home.
And on the Sunday morning, there was a second set of arrests. It was sort of following that online. It sounded like another couple of hundred people at least had been arrested.
Yeah, actually, I don't have the number here. I think it was maybe between 200 and 400. It was basically a civil disobedience demonstration called Hit the Production, and they wanted to attempt to blockade a port to highlight the role of capitalism in creating climate change. But the police basically said that the demonstration wasn't going to happen. It was described online as an illegal demonstration, which, as far as I'm aware, is not true. It's not illegal to have a demonstration. But the they decided it wasn't going to happen, and they attacked the demonstration and arrested everyone there, which they justified by because they found some gas masks in the demo wagon, or they said they did anyway. But you know, gas masks aren't legal either. So yeah, that was a bit strange. I mean, I think it was actually made somewhat more sense than the attack on Saturdays, because they have basically decided that civil disobedience is illegal and they're not going to tolerate it at all. But the attack on Saturday was just a peaceful demonstration which they attacked, which was even more strange.
And in terms of the issues around climate change itself, what do you see as some of the core points?
Yeah, I mean, I would see the main issues. Well, for me, the food crisis is a pretty big issue. That, you know, climate change is changing weather patterns, which is meaning that agricultural yields are fluctuating quite wildly, which has led to a large increase in food prices. And, you know, I think we're kind of in the middle of two very steep rises. There was a lot of talk about that last year, but and it's kind of, there was some good harvests this year, and food prices are a little bit lower now, but they're going to start spiking up again. And I think in the future we're going to have a lot more of sharply spiking food prices. That's obviously a huge issue, you know. If food prices increase, they're going to increase for everybody all over the world. It's going to lead to famine and starvation, and it's going to lead to pretty serious social unrest in the developed world as well. I'd also see, you know, water as a pretty big issue, a decrease in the supply of drinkable water, flooding. It's a pretty big issue. We've seen that a lot in Ireland, that flooding is becoming a lot more common. You know, floods, what was it, 2009 was the year with the most floods on record, and the last one on record was 2008. I also think extreme weather is going to be a big issue for certain areas of the world, such as the Katrina hurricane that destroyed much of New Orleans.
And do you have any expectation that anything useful might come out of the talks?
No, short answer. I mean, as I said earlier, the politicians are downplaying the talks. And, I mean, even if they did achieve some kind of agreement, it would be on something like on carbon trading or clean development mechanisms or something like that, which are, in my opinion, completely useless. I don't think I don't think carbon trading is going to do anything to stop climate change. I don't think it's going to reduce emissions. I think it's just going to. I think it's just creating a market for. I don't think it can solve the issue at all. The last big attempt at solving it was the Kyoto Agreement, which hasn't managed to slow down carbon emissions at all. And actually, you know, the rate of carbon emissions has increased, and the rate of increase in carbon emissions has increased. So, I'd be completely skeptical about it.
You're obviously pretty critical of the official process. In terms of the left, what do you think we should be arguing for in relation to climate change?
Well, I think the most important thing we need to be doing is to be trying to turn the climate change issue and turn into a fight on practical issues. If you look at the history of the climate change movement or the climate justice movement, it kind of started around 2005, 2006 with the Glen Eagles Eco Village, and it's been quite rooted in that anti-globalization kind of summit hopping mindset of activism that they've been doing. you know, really focused on big events such as the climate camps, or shutting down coal stations, or I think it was trying to shut down a turf station in Ireland. And so I think this stereotypically activist focus has allowed a lot of the left wing, the more class-oriented left wing, to dismiss climate change issues as unimportant, whereas what we really should be doing is trying to give a class content to these issues. And for me, that means tying local direct struggles into the bigger narrative about climate change and the bigger climate justice movement. So, I mean, some examples would be like trying to fight for the free public transport. So the group in Sweden, Planka.nu, which WSN has written on before, they're trying to tie in their activism for free public transport, which they would see as a class demand. They're trying to tie that in with the climate change issue. I also think, as I said before, I think climate change is going to result in increased food and water prices. And these are very fundamentally class issues, and they could be the basis of a more broad movement than the climate justice movement we've seen to date, in the developed world at least. I think we also need to think the climate change issue gives us a really good opportunity to fight on the battle of ideas, to show that climate change is caused by capitalism, and to show that the solutions they're trying to impose are just ones that affect the root of the problem, but they just kind of continue the same old problem, the ones that transfer wealth from the poor and the working class towards the global elite.
And in terms of what the left is saying or writing around the issue, are you seeing any of that in it, or do you think it's complete disengagement?
I mean, I think, you know, you're seeing some engagement. There's groups like Workers Climate Action, who I think are pretty solid. I think the Vestas occupation gave a lot of people the opportunity to make that connection between worker struggles and climate change and climate justice.
I think that was an occupation of a factory that was producing wind turbines, I think, yes?
Yeah, precisely. And it was kind of like, it was a very obvious example of how irrational capitalism is, that, you know, in the midst of all this, you know, talk about reducing carbon emissions, a wind turbine factory is being closed down, and people are being made unemployed when they have skills that are extremely useful to stopping climate change. It's just completely irrational. I think you can also see in a more serious engagement, like with the Turbulence Collective. They're doing some pretty good stuff, writing some good stuff. But I also think that more kind of labor union focused people need to be working more in it. Like syndicalist types need to really be trying to tie their issues into the climate change issues.
Do you think there's much of a possibility of controlling climate change within the context of the global capitalist economy?
No, unfortunately. I think it's pretty much impossible. The basis of capitalism is constantly increasing production. You know, every time that you have profit, you make profit from selling commodities, you have to reinvest that profit into production and increase production. Otherwise, you're going to be outcompeted, and you're going to lose your your business. And constantly increasing production means constantly increasing the consumption of resources. Trying to maximize the profit also means that environmental costs are always going to be externalized. That means that the you know, instead of paying extra and changing your production so that the waste doesn't go into a river but is recycled instead, instead of doing that, you might just, you know, locate your factories somewhere in another country, in a third world country, where they don't have that kind of legislation that prevents you from polluting the river. I also think, I mean, the only real answer to it is to this problem of externalization is more legislation. And I think you can see that environmental legislation is kind of leading to an increase in environmental crime. Like, the more expensive you make it to abide by the laws, the more companies are going to break the laws. So you have this story of the mafia running a business where they would sell space on boats for highly toxic waste, and then businesses would pay money and get their space on the boats, and then the mafia would sail them south of Italy and scuttle them so that the waste went into the water. I think that's the kind of thing we're going to be seeing a lot.
Yep, there was a case I heard of actually in BBC of multiple deaths being caused in a Nigerian port town by an oil tanker, which had lots of dirty sludge in the bottom coming down for supposed decontamination, which consisted of loading it into the sludge into garbage trucks and dumping it into a gully at the edge of town. And it just turned out to be a lot more toxic than what people expected. So it was, a major disaster, as I said, that resulted in many deaths. But that sort of thing certainly seems to be becoming more common. We had the arguments made explicitly by, I think, some of the World Bank people a few years back that it made sense to dump in poorer countries because they were kind of less vitally economically important.
Yeah. I mean, that was really funny, just to have someone saying it so straight out that the poor are worth less, because they're economically worth less. So as humans, they're worth less, I think it's rare to hear a member of the global elite just saying it straight out like that. And of course, people are horrified, but, the logic is the same whether you're upfront about it or not. The only difference is that he was upfront about it.
The other one I'm going to mention this in passing, because I've been doing a good bit of reading about it recently, is that the whole computer recycling business, which turns out means shipping the stuff off, in the American case mostly to African countries, in the European case, because the laws are a little stricter, to India. But certainly in the African case, the so-called recycling largely consists of kids setting fire to piles of computers and then pulling out whatever copper and other things can be used. And when you're doing that on a mass scale, that's incredibly toxic. I mean, it's poisoning large areas of land. It's leading to a lot of premature deaths. I mean, the whole capitalist environmentalist thing in practice, when you bring it into the free market and send the stuff to wherever it's going to cost the least, has been quite disastrous for people.
Yeah, I mean that's it. As long as environmentally friendly businesses or environmentally friendly production or whatever you want to call it is being run on a profit basis, it's not going to be based on being environmentally friendly. It's going to be based on making profit. So it's technically impossible, I would say.
Returning to Copenhagen and the COP15, Well, you obviously aren't particularly optimistic about the talks. You can hardly be blamed, particularly in the light of today's events, when I understand there's a fairly significant walkout has happened. But in terms of the fact that Copenhagen is, briefly the focus of the world's attention, and probably more importantly in terms of the actual protests that are happening there, what sort of positive things, if any, do you expect to come out of the whole circus that's essentially descended on the town?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I wouldn't expect anything positive to come out of the talks. I think the only place to look for something positive is in the mobilisation against the talks among activists, among different groups. I think the opportunity to meet each other and to network and to learn from each other's experiences is going to be positive. I mean, I really hope that the movement that emerges will be based on day-to-day issues rather than kind of like the big summits. And I think that's quite likely, really, because a lot of the people who are involved in the globalization movement and saw the critique of it that was made, that it was too much rooted in these spectacular actions, are now involved in the in the climate justice movement. So I think there's quite a big possibility for learning from those mistakes. I also think the climate change issue is a lot easier to tie into your daily life, you know, with food prices and with transport, and also with things like, you know, the activists in Britain who have been trying to make connections with the villagers. I think the town is called Tipton, which is like north of Heathrow, or somewhere near Heathrow Airport, where they're trying to demolish the entire town to make another runway, and completely ludicrous because air transport is really polluting and really harmful to the environment, harmful to produces a lot of carbon emissions. But at the same time, they're building a third runway. It's completely crazy. But I would really look for the hope that the climate justice movement emerges stronger and focused on day-to-day reality, and that they bring that home.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us, and I think there's 4 more days left to run, is it? So good luck with whatever is planned for those days.
Yeah, thanks very much.
This audio download is an interview with Ronan in Copenhagen about the climate change conference, COP15. Ronan was one of 960-odd people arrested on Saturday as part of the suppression of one of the largest demonstrations in Copenhagen, some 100,000 people. You'll find more audio recordings at www.wsm.ie.